This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome to the Storytime Podcast. My name is Claire Cluzer on the internet. The Storytime Podcast is available on YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you get your podcasts. And today I have with me Linda Kelly. How are you, Linda?
I'm good, thank you.
Do you want to tell everyone where to find you on the internet?
Yes, so if you're on Twitter, you can find me at Linda B Tweeting. And if you're on Instagram, you can find me at Women Ascend. And women is spelt with an X.
Okay.
Instead of the E. Sorry, I should have explained that. That made no sense the way I said it. Oh my God. So it's WOMXN, like underscore ASCEND.
Yeah, I will put the links down in the description on YouTube and in the show notes on the audio platforms as well. So what is the story you're here to share with us today?
Giving birth. And in a way that, I suppose, like when I went in to have my first baby, you know, there was just this enigma about giving birth. I didn't really understand, you know, I knew I was pregnant. I knew I was going to come home with a baby, but I didn't really know what happened in between. Other than people saying, yeah, you know, everybody knows you get to 10 centimetres, you do X, Y and Z. But there's, like in my experience, there's a real reluctance to talk about the nitty gritty of childbirth. Probably because a lot less people would do it, I think. So I suppose I felt very isolated and very alone after I had my first baby because I had a really negative birth experience. And so I would like there to be a story on the internet that helps other women to feel less alone if it doesn't go the way that they planned it to go.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, I suppose, like, if I start at the beginning, Claire, I was told I wasn't going to get pregnant naturally by an expert fertility specialist because I have polycystic ovary syndrome, and I've known that since I was 20. I was diagnosed really young. So I kind of always knew that that was going to be an issue, and I was due to get married, and we went and we got some fertility tests done just to know kind of what we were dealing with. And the doctor was like, look, like, it's really unlikely that you're going to get pregnant because I don't get periods. So this whole 28-day cycle is just something I have never experienced. And that was fine, and like, we'd had to stop all contraception to get the fertility test done, and we were like, look, we'll leave it to fate, we won't worry too much about it, and we'll kind of come back to it after we get married. And that was grand, and we were just plodding along, like, you know, getting ready for our wedding, going to lots of other weddings, which seems just like a whole lifetime ago now at the moment in COVID. And I should have kind of maybe guessed that something was up, because I had said to Joe, my husband, one weekend, I was like, you know, maybe we should look at something like contraception wise because, like, you know, if I got pregnant now, like, the wedding, like, would be totally messed up. And he was like, nah, never gonna happen, you know, don't worry about it. And then we were at a wedding and somebody said to me, oh, is that water you're drinking? Are you pregnant? And I was like, no, I'm really not. Like, it's vodka. Here, have some. And so that was Saturday. And on Monday, on the morning of Stormophilia, I went to the doctor because I had a skin issue on my face. And he was like, it looks really hormonal. He was a new GP. And I went through the whole rigmarole and I explained everything. And he was like, I just really want to do a pregnancy test. And I was like, no, I was like, it's going to be negative. They're always negative. Like, you know, and next thing he said, so that's positive. And I was sitting down and I fell off the chair pretty much. And so we came home, and like, if you remember Stormophilia, like, everybody was locked in their house, and like, we were in this tiny apartment and we just didn't know what to do with ourselves. And like, the doctor was like, you could be 13 weeks pregnant. We were like, what? And then we were trying to work out the dates with the wedding and everything. And then we had to go for a scan. It turned out I was only 5 weeks pregnant. And then that whole thing of, what do we do? Because are we tempting fate if we change our wedding? And we have to tell people, but you're not meant to tell people. And all of this sort of thing going on. So anyway, we got sorted. brought our wedding forward by like 5-6 months, had a total shotgun wedding, very lucky. Everything worked out, like all the vendors changed, the hotel were fantastic, Garivo Hotel in Cork, they really deserve a mention, they were brilliant. And so we got hitched in February, I was about 5.5 months pregnant, and my pregnancy was pretty straightforward apart from bad morning sickness, and that was fine, and kind of got to my due date. I was huge, like I'm 5'2". My bump was as wide pretty much as I am tall. Like I was just huge. And so we were going along and I was going in for my checkups and I was a few days overdue and I went in and they started to get very worried. And they were like, look, you're after kind of getting too big and we're worried there's too much fluid around the baby. But it's Friday afternoon and we don't have anybody to scan you. So just go home for the weekend. Don't worry about it. Come back in on Monday with your hospital bag and we'll probably do a C-section.
Oh my God.
And I was with a midwife-led scheme. So like I was really hoping for like as natural as possible, as least intervention as possible. The domino scheme, very badly advertised, but a brilliant scheme for low-risk pregnancies, midwife-led, continuity of care, lots of care in your home afterwards. I was just really looking for that. And we went home, and that whole plan gone out the window. Bag packed. It was the middle of a heat wave as well. So, you know, 2 years ago, we had just a massive heat wave, 41 weeks pregnant. And went to
I was about to be like, God, you remember the weather so well, but then I was like, oh, obviously you would actually. It would have been so uncomfortable. Yeah.
And also the maternity hospital is made of glass. And so the weather was so warm, they had to take out windows out of the maternity hospital to try and get air in. The babies were in nappies and they were so worried about the babies because of the heat that they were checking on them all the time. That's how hot it was. Like I slept in my knickers, the baby slept in their nappy. Like that's how insane it was. But I digress. So we go back to that weekend and I go in on the Monday and they scan me and they're like, actually everything's fine. And at this stage, I'm just like, what? So they tell me everything is fine. I should be relieved and elated. Instead, I just am inconsolable, burst out. They have to go get one of the domino midwives to like come and tell me it's okay. They send me home. I'm a week overdue already. I can barely walk. I'm so big. And like I've been on that stupid exercise ball. I was putting cod liver tablets up my, you know, because they tell you to do that. I was doing as much as possible, eating spicy food. Like, you know, that episode of Friends where Rachel is like trying to get the baby out. Like, imagine that. And so I went home and I was like, right, that's it. So we went to the beach for the next 2 days and I just waddled in and out of the water in a swimsuit a maternity swimsuit that was stretching at the seams. And next thing on the Thursday morning, my waters broke and I was like, yes. Yes, we can go. We're good to go. We're good to go. This is like 4 a.m. in the morning. So I ring the hospital and they're like, yeah, you're due to come in anyway later on. So like come in and we'll examine you and hopefully you're kind of on the road. I don't really know what that means at the time. I'm just kind of like, okay, yeah, great. Like, you know, and it's like you're 40 weeks waiting for this, you know, so like you're really kind of amped up. And so then I go in and the midwife was like, oh, I don't know why they bother telling you to come in. Like, sure, there's nothing we can do. Like, you've no contractions, just kind of. And I'm like, what? She does a sweep. Ugh. Now, this midwife is excellent. She has a reputation for her sweeps. So a sweep is where somebody puts their hand up into your vagina, around the neck of your cervix, to basically try and loosen the mucus plug and get things going, like a whole Jesus. Hand, a whole human hand.
Oh my God.
And she, I had had one the week before from a doctor, which like just, like I barely even felt it. This one, I cried out in pain at. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I was all day like trying to, like, what was that? So I got sent home again and I got told back in that night. This is very typical, by the way, like typical enough. And to come back in that night, because if I hadn't started, they were going to have to induce me, because when the waters break, the risk of infection starts to increase the longer you go without anything happening. So we go home. I haven't had a single contraction. Nothing else has happened other than a little bit of water is breaking. And so then I go back in. I'm admitted. That's all fine. The next morning I'm waiting around. Then I get brought down to an induction ward. Like nothing has happened. So then they break my waters, which is one part of the induction. Sometimes you can get gels and things like that. Because my waters were broken, that wasn't indicated. So I didn't get the gels and they just went straight to breaking my waters.
They like broke them for you again, or?
Yeah, because you have two sets of waters.
Okay.
So I'm sitting there, right? And the doctor turned out to be lovely, but his opening line to me when he pulled back the curtain and like saw how big I was, he was like, "What have you been eating? Diet Coke and crisps?"
Jesus.
And if like he saw my face, I was just like, I'm sorry. You, the medical people in this hospital, have missed the fact that my baby has exploded in size. I don't know what's going on inside there. And now you're telling me my baby's too big and that I have to be in. And I'm like, and you missed it. And that's how you start your con. I was just.
And then he's slagging you.
He actually turned out to be a lovely doctor. But like, we didn't, like, the first. I was just like, sorry.
Didn't make a great first impression, yeah.
So he breaks my water, which is not a nice experience either, because it's kind of like a knitting needle going up there. It's obviously not an actual knitting needle.
Yeah.
But like, you know, that's what it kind of reminds me of. And like the week previous, when they thought I had loads of fluid, one of the midwives had told me it would be like Niagara Falls when the water is broke. And that was just in my head. And I stood up from the bed and she was so right. It was like Niagara Falls. I was just, I know I couldn't do anything about it, but I was just so mortified. Like there was just
water
everywhere, like, you know. And then I had to go out and then you get given the disposable underwear and they had to clean up everything. And you know, you're just like, oh, this is awful. So they send me out walking the corridors to try and bring on contractions. Nothing's happening. Then I go back in after a few hours for a review and this consultant comes in and he's the consultant on call. And so at this stage, they know my baby is very big. They know that she is very high up in my pelvis. So they have a grading scale from -3 to +3. So +3 is the baby is out. They're born. She's at -3. So she couldn't be any higher.
She's in there. Yeah.
And she's also the wrong way around. She's facing sunny side up, so she's not facing toward the back, which she
and that's dangerous, isn't it?
Well, it just complicates things.
Like,
she wasn't breech, but she's just the wrong way around. And so that's fine. And they just say, okay, well, look, it's time to go on the oxytocin drip and we'll induce you. And I said, what about a section? And the look he gave me. And the dismissal, he just said, why would you want a section? Like, you don't want that. And like, at this stage now, it's been like 36 hours since my waters have broken, like on top of 40 weeks. I'm almost 2 weeks overdue. I'm just exhausted, but I will always regret I gave up in that moment and I didn't advocate for myself and I can never go back. But like, that's not on me, because like I feel that he, you know, took advantage of his power in the situation, because like when you're a first time mom going in, like, you know, myself and my husband, like, we didn't have a clue. We'd never done this before. It's our first time ever doing it. And they're in a position of authority. They're the ones with the doctor title, the consultant title. You're relying on them. But like, they didn't even go through with me the pros and cons of the induction versus the section. And the midwives were amazing. Like, I mean, the Domino midwives who'd cared for me all through my pregnancy, they were there like my guards, you know, just kind of checking in. And one of them came in to me and she said to my husband, she was like, get Linda's bags, pack them up really quietly and just follow us out of the room. And we were just like, what's going on? She was like, I don't have any other Domino patients in tonight. So she was like, I'm going to take you. Because at that stage, I wasn't allowed in the Domino scheme anymore. I'd been transferred into obstetrics. And they were like, and you have to get the epidural. The drugs are so hard on your system. And these are now the midwives who advocate non-intervention. Like, three of them came into me and they were like, you have to take the drugs. Like, it's so hard on your system to have the oxytocin. So to be honest...
So, sorry, for a total newbie question here. What's the... So there's a different... There's other drugs... I thought it was just like epidural or no epidural is what I kind of thought. So what is,
so
what's the difference?
Oxytocin is the drug they give you to induce you to bring on the labour.
Yes, and you were getting induced, gotcha.
Of the hormone that causes labour in your body. And then the epidural is pain management that.
So you had originally planned not to get the epidural, but because you had to be induced, they were recommending. Yeah. Okay, now I'm on the same page as you. Yep.
And like, this is that was my first time hearing about it as well, you know what I mean? Like, in the room, like, when you're kind of, they're looking at you to make a decision just like that. And so we're there, and then the drugs just start in earnest. Like, so the oxytocin goes in, then I'm on antibiotics because they're worried about infection. And then the pain gets so bad that I'm getting the epidural into my spine. That gets topped up. So this is about 6 o'clock on a Friday night. And like, keep in mind, my first waters broke at 4 o'clock on Thursday morning. And then, like, to be honest, I don't remember most of the night. I remember at one stage feeling like my body was going to just break in half. And they came in and topped up the epidural again. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I begged for a section. Like, the doctor came in and I was like, please. I was like, I just cannot do this. And like, I had agreed with my husband a kind of code for like when I would say it was like too much for me. Like, and I was bawling. I was like, too much. I was spiking infections. I was spiking temperatures because of infections. And then I eventually get to 10 centimetres. So they wouldn't do the section because my labour was progressing, which is something I understand, you know what I mean? Like, even in the haze of all of it, I understood that. So I got to 10 centimetres and then I'm pushing for 2 hours, even though normally it's just for one. And then they're like, you know, they're coming around to the realization that they've always known, which is that I'm going to have a section. And it's funny, actually, what I didn't say earlier is, like, after that doctor said, like, why would you want a section, when they left the room, I turned to my husband and I was like, you know, by their faces, I am having a section. There is no way this baby is coming naturally. And so it's maybe 7:30 on the Saturday morning, and they're like, yeah, look, she's pushed for 2 hours, like, she needs a section. And then they ask one doctor about it and he says, well, I'm going off shift now, so like, you're just gonna have to wait for the next shift to start, which is fine. Like, people, you know, that's people are entitled to go home after their night shift. And next thing you go, and I think this is one of the scariest things, you went from having one midwife in the room with you to suddenly the room filled with people. And so all I remember is somebody was shaving me. Somebody was trying to go through the risks of the procedure and get my consent. My husband is trying to hold back the tears in the corner. Somebody else is pricking my arm to see, can I feel the anesthetic? And I'm just like, what is going on? Like, and they bring me down to have the operation, and then you're separated from your partner for a few minutes while they get you prepped. And then they're like, right, we're ready to go. My husband still isn't there, and I'm just bawling. Like, I'm just like paralyzed from the waist down, strapped to a bed, like a theater bed. So you're like strapped out like a crucifix. And I'm just like, where is my husband? And the anesthesiologist was so kind. She was like wiping away my tears, and she was just like, please get her husband, please get her husband.
I've actually had great experiences with anesthesiologists. They've always been lovely to me.
Yeah, she was so kind, like I'll never forget. Like everybody else was just off doing their thing, like. And so then that's fine, they do the operation, baby comes out. First thing I said to my little baby was, why are you so big? Captured on video for eternity on a GoPro. I'm gonna have to try and explain that to her. Drugged off my tree, and she was 10 pounds 11, which is pretty much the size that my second baby was at 3 months.
Oh my god!
Like all the midwives are like, Jesus, girl, you were never gonna give birth to her naturally, and I'm like, I know. So she was the biggest baby in the ward, born that whole weekend. She had a full head of hair, like she came out looking like a grown child. And they were just like, and the doctor who had made the Diet Coke comment came into me in the recovery room afterwards. And this I really appreciated. He just came up to me and he said, you did absolutely everything you could. There was no way you could have delivered that baby naturally. And like, you know, that's reassuring, but also, why did you then put me through?
How did you hold yourself back from being like, well, yeah, I'm fucking sure,
like I was out of it. Like, so I had no memory.
Oh yeah, of course.
Like, so that's she was born at 9:15 on Saturday morning. I have no memory of the Saturday. Like my parents came to visit me. I had a proper fight with my mother one day because I was like, you didn't come to visit me that day. I was like, you didn't. I don't remember that at all. Then my husband showed me the picture. So yes, they did come and visit me. I have no memory of the Saturday really at all. And then Sunday I kind of started coming around. So really the main memory I have on the Saturday is like when they brought me back up to the ward, like my husband's just elated because like he hasn't had a major operation. He's just got this lovely little baby to cuddle and snuggle. And I just remember feeling so empty. And like just didn't feel anything, you know, like. And I think that's one thing that I would say to people is like bonding isn't always immediate. Like for some people it is, but I know for a lot of people, and for me definitely it wasn't. And that, like, I think the fact that we don't talk about that is really destructive, because then I just spent ages being like, what's wrong with me, you know? But actually I found like my love just grew and grew as the baby grew and grew, you know?
Yeah.
But that is something that I think is something we have to talk about. So I'm in hospital for the 5 days and then I get sent home. Everybody admires my section scar. They're all like, oh, the surgeon did a great job. That's lovely. And I'm like, really? Okay. And it's not until like the Monday or the Tuesday maybe. Like, and at that stage, I'm just like really angry as to why they put me through that. Because everybody's just telling me, like all the nurses are like, yeah, you were never going to have that baby. And I'm just like, well, why then? Like, why was I made to do that? Like, and so a midwife came in and she explained to me, she was like, look, it's so that if you want to have another baby, you can go for a vaginal delivery because you got 10 centimeters, it makes it much easier. And I was like, thank you. I was like, you're the first person in 4 days to actually explain that to me. And the Domino midwives came and looked after me, and they even came and did a debrief in my home afterwards, which they weren't required to do, but they did it. And I feel like that really helped because it was such a negative experience, but like it still wasn't enough. Like I feel like it really impacted that whole first year. And like I just felt like wasn't good enough, like, or I couldn't do it, or like I was left, I had incredible back pain for months afterwards, and that's not normal. If anybody's listening, you should not have lots of pain like after the recovery. Like I just kind of thought like this is just all part of it, like. And it wasn't really until I was pregnant with my second baby and got physio that a lot of those issues resolved. So Then we come around to baby number two.
Yeah, so I think I'd said that I'd been told I wasn't going to get pregnant naturally. And so I had gotten the bar in my arm after baby number one because I was so traumatized from the birth that, like, at the 6-week checkup, I was like, sort me out. I was like, I am not doing that again. And then a year passed and, you know, we had chats and conversations and things, and we did want a second baby. We're like, right, we'll leave it to fate again, you know, and we'll just kind of stop what we're doing and we'll just kind of see what happens. I fully expected that it wasn't going to happen. Like, it had been about 2 years the first time. 4 months, Claire. 4 months.
That is one thing that the doctors were saying to me. They were like, once your body knows how to get pregnant the second time, it should happen quicker, yeah. But yeah. That would have surprised me as well, yeah.
Yeah, so suddenly we were just like, what? We're going to have like 2 under 3. Like, this is insane. So so then I, but this is very distressing, this next part, by the way. Like, I'm kind of, it is what it is, but I know when I tell people they get really taken aback by it. But I went to my booking appointment. So that's when you go in when you're around the 12-week mark and they kind of give you your pack and kind of go through all these questions with you. And the midwife came into me and she said, she brought me into the little room and she was like, so the last time you were here, it was really traumatic. And I was like, yeah, you don't have to tell me. And like, you know, I'm kind of going through it. And something about how I was talking clicked with her. And I don't know what it is. And she went, okay, she said, it actually says on your file that your baby died. And I was like, sorry, what? And she's like, obviously it's a clerical error. And then she like, now she was brilliant. She like, because I was just like, what? I was like, no. I was like, I have a very healthy, like 18-month-old at home. Like, what are you talking about? I was like, has that been on my file for how long? I was like, has that been sent somewhere? Like, does my baby no longer exist?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of like all the things like that you get registered for on your birth. Yeah. It's like,
I was like, has somebody sent a death cert like in my daughter's name somewhere? But like, really, to be honest, I'm just trying not to puke on the woman because the morning sickness is so bad the second time that I almost get hospitalized with it. I lost about like maybe a stone, like probably because
did you have that sickness. The condition, I don't know what it's called, you know,
almost
the one that...
yeah, hyper, I can't pronounce it,
yeah, I can't pronounce it.
I did get medication, I like, you know, and there was one point where my GP was going to send me in for fluids and things like that, but I managed to just kind of, I knew if that happened, I was just, there was no, because I used to be hospitalized with migraines and I would be very sick and vomit. Anyway, that's not, neither here nor there, it's sick. So I'm just, she goes through the booking stuff and then I'm now, and she clicked it and she's brilliant and, you know, we kind of go through everything. But like, it just left me afterwards just going, like, can this hospital do nothing right? Like, and and it's the only hospital where you can have a baby in Cork, so you have no other option about where, because they centralized everything into this hospital in 2006, and that's problematic, I think, that you don't have a choice as to where to give birth unless you opt for a home birth. And that's fine. And I'm just kind of, so then they're sending me for physio about my back, which nobody had told me was an option. And the reception lady or the admin lady from physio rings me, or I ring her because they send me an appointment for a class. And I'm like, that's not what I was referred for. Like, I wasn't referred for a class. I don't have pelvic girdle. This is, you know, so I ring her and I'm like, no, this is not what I talked about with the nurse. And she's getting frustrated with me because she's like, this is everybody's entry point into the physio service. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not appropriate. And then I burst into tears on the phone, like burst into tears. And she's just like, whoa, like, and I'm just, and then through the tears, I'm like, they told me my baby was dead. And like, why can't anything go right in this hospital? And like, and she's just like, okay. And she's horrified. And she's like, you need to tell someone about that. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And so I'm kind of getting myself geared up to like write a letter of complaint about this whole thing. And then I'm in Dublin for work And I'm driving home from Dublin and I just start getting this really bad pain in my side. And I'm like, what is this? And I stop in like junction 14, which if anybody does the Dublin Cork drive a lot, you'll know you have your favourite service stations. I go in, I'm like barely able to walk, get myself some 7-Up because obviously that'll make me feel better.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm ringing my husband and I'm like, I really don't feel very well. I've got this really bad pain in my side. And he's just like, okay, like, do you want me to drive up? And I'm like, no, you're minding the other baby. I'm like, how would we get the cars? Like, and all this. So I keep driving, and by about Tipperary, I'm like pretty much blinded by pain. I get home, I just crawl into bed, like, don't even barely say hi to him. It's about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, like, can't really walk. Go to my GP the next morning. She's like, so yeah, she's like, I think your appendix might be going and you need to go to the hospital. And I'm like, sorry, what? Like, that has, what? So then I go and I'm in the A&E for the day and they're like, oh no, it's not your appendix. Like, you're not sick enough. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not. Like, it's not. Just let me go home. It's fine. Like, you know, it's grand. Like, even have a bit of lunch, like, in A&E. And my husband's just looking at me going, you know, I realise it's a podcast, so people, well, it's a video podcast, so people who are watching on YouTube will see that, but my face is basically my husband giving me side eye, you know, as I'm in total denial about this. And next thing, anyway, the surgeons come over from the main hospital and he takes one examination. He's like, yeah, you have to have your appendix out right now. And I'm just like, what? So I'm like ringing my boss at like 8 o'clock on a Tuesday being like, yeah, I'm going for surgery, so like I'm not going to be in work for a while. And so, and then like the scariest part, like they come at like 11 o'clock at night and they're like, so there's a risk to the baby that you're going to lose the baby in about 14 weeks at this stage. And they're like, but if you don't get it taken out and if your appendix bursts, the risk gets bigger, so you have really no option, like this has to come out. And I'm just like, okay, like, okay. Okay, I guess, like, and so I go get my appendix out and I have a really positive experience in the hospital. I get to meet my team this time around. I'm not with Domino this time, so I've picked a team. I've made it known I don't want the consultant from my first birth anywhere near me at all. Even when I see him in the corridor at appointments, I'm like, like, you know, I'm like, oh. And so I get to meet the team and stuff like that, and that's lovely. So I go home and I recover, and I'm just about to go back to work, and COVID hits. So I haven't left my house since the first week of February 2020. And then, so then I spend the second half of my pregnancy in the whole COVID thing when nobody knows what's going on. They don't know how it affects pregnant people. I get absolutely zero advice from the hospital or anyone. Like, everyone was in the same boat. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it was what it was, because it was so new and the restrictions came in. So like, you know, in kind of early March, they just stopped everything. So like, in some hospitals in the Midlands, they even stopped partners coming into the actual birth, and women were left on their own in, I think it was Midlands Regional Hospital. So all of this is going on. You're at, like, you know, you're there. I'm like, is it even safe to go to the shop? Like, my girl, like my little girl, like my husband's a teacher. I'm like, you know, all these things. And it comes around to it, and then, like, so I'm asking the hospital about, like, the restrictions. It's coming, I was due in, when, so I was having the baby in the middle of July. So around May, I think it was May, like, numbers started to really come down. Things were starting to open up again. And, like, you know, we were talking about going out to pubs and nobody was talking about the maternity hospital.
Yeah, I found that really frustrating. Is like, even as the restrictions kind of started to lift for everything, because, like, June, July, I would have been going to pubs and eating food. I would have been playing tag rugby, like, and yet couldn't bring the other half in, like.
Yeah, it was enraging. Like, I just found myself screaming into the void. And like, a lot of the feedback was like, oh sure, it's grand. Like, women have been giving birth on their own. And like, I was just there going, if what happens to me this time is what happened to me the last time, I'm like, you know, I'm like, no, like, I would not have survived the first birth without my husband there. Like, I mean, I clung to his hand the entire time, like, you know. And I was so, like, it's just every emotion, you know. Some days you're like, okay, I can do this, and then it's like I'm a pretty resilient person, I'm a pretty strong-willed person, but like when you're giving birth, you don't want to be that person. You want to be vulnerable, you want to have somebody cuddle you, you want somebody to, you know, dry your tears, you want all of those things. And then that was just being taken away. There was no explanation, nobody was coming out to say what evidence there was around these restrictions. And they're appropriate in a surge situation, so like they're in at the moment, they haven't changed really. They haven't changed in Cork, like they've been back and forth a bit in Dublin, but they haven't changed in Cork. So the restrictions that were put in place last March in anticipation of a surge have never changed in Cork. So by the time I gave birth, if I had given birth in Dublin, my husband could have come in to visit me. Instead, he had to drop me at the door, leave. I had to go in myself, wheel in my suitcase. There was a woman just bawling her eyes out in reception. All I wanted to do was go give her a hug. So I was like, I feel exactly the same as you. Like, I'm just trying to keep it together. And it's different this time because I've opted for a section. It's much more planned. There isn't, you know,
still, it must have been really scary after, like, you know, having that experience that you'd previously had and then having to go in on your own.
It was just shit. Just shit. Like, there is, like, my husband one day turned around to me and he was like, are you ever going to talk about, like, when you, what happened in the hospital? And I was like, no. I was like, I'm just hopefully going to forget it. And so then I ring him and he has to come. I'm going down for the operation and they bring me in to do the anaesthetic, and that's on your own, and that has always been the way it is. It's it was like that before COVID as well.
And so, sorry, was he there for the section?
Yeah, he was allowed for the section. Okay. And in the recovery room. So I'm in getting the anaesthetic and an older midwife comes along and just goes, where's the hat? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, the hat for the baby. And I'm like, I've got like 5 hats up in the ward, but none in the delivery room because they gave the hat the last time. So like nobody said anything. So, and like I wanted a new hat, like I didn't want to bring my old hat with me because I wanted both of them to have hats in their like baby.
Yeah,
office.
So again, totally new to this, like, is that, do they always put a hat on a baby?
I thought they did, but then I was, you know, then she's like, oh, like you didn't bring a hat, and she toots me, and suddenly all of the emotion like just comes, and I, and the theater nurses who are like trying to, like, what's your name, what's your date of birth, like, who are trying to, you know, stab me with this gigantic anesthetic needle, and I'm just can't breathe. I'm just so, like, crying so much. And it's like my 36 week appointment where I asked the doctor about the restrictions and she was like, you should have no hope, the restrictions are lifting. I spent the entire appointment crying, couldn't remember anything. And like, I don't think that's like, I don't think there was anything abnormal about my reaction, you know, but definitely some people made me feel like there it was, because they were like, oh sure, like, you know, it's a pandemic, they're trying to keep COVID out of hospitals, and it's like, but there's no evidence, like they haven't put out the evidence of the risk assessments. We're living in the same household, we're sleeping in the same bed, where is the additional risk? Like, you know, I just, there's still very much in the maternity services this attitude of like the doctor is God. And I thought we had really moved away from that as a country, but definitely like when you're having a baby, it just, you come smack back up against it. And then there, so that's, so the hat tips me over the edge, and then we're back to the operation. And next thing I hear them calling for the senior consultant, and I'm just like, what's happening? And I know something's after happening, and everything's fine, the baby's fine, and I'm fine. But there was lots of extra scar tissue from the first operation, just whatever way I healed. And like nobody could have known that, nobody could have predicted that. So they're talking to me in the recovery room, and I've got like a tube coming out of my stomach because they have to drain blood, because they've done, like, they took my bladder out of my body, and like they've done all of this stuff, and I'm just like, what? And so I actually, and this is part of the problem, like it's not just about emotional support. Like people think like, oh sure, like you know, would you ever get over yourself? Like you just want somebody to hold your hand. Like there is research that you have better medical outcomes when you have a
A
support
witness.
partner with you. Like, you know what I mean? When there's someone there to advocate for you, when there's someone who's not drugged up there to understand what's happening. So I misunderstood what they had said to me, and I spent the whole night thinking I was going to have another operation the next day if the blood was over a certain amount in my like little blood pump thing. And so the nurse comes in that night to change it, and she's like, oh, it's 150 mils, and I think 100 was the cap. And I'm like, so I just spent the whole first night thinking I was going back in for another operation. I was like, three operations in 6 months. I was just so like, so over people touching my body in a medical sense. And then so then the doctor comes around the next morning and I'm there, and he's going through it, and he's like, look, we leave it in for another day. And I'm like, but what about the operation? He's like, what operation? We're not operating on you again. I'm like, what? And so yeah,
The
there was great
relief.
relief there. But like I'd nobody, like, you know, you've nobody to talk to, and like there's just like people, like I remember the bed opposite me, like I just could hear the woman crying. You know, she was like on the phone to her family, and you could hear it was like, yeah, I'm fine. And then her voice would break, and you're just totally there on your own, you know. And then like you kind of just get through it, and like they take such advantage of women's resilience. Like they have taken such advantage of women's resilience during the pandemic in so many different facets, but definitely around this. And like it's not that it's fine, but like it's a very different experience if you have a natural vaginal delivery, because for the most part they're discharging people within 24 hours, so you're not in the hospital for that long. But like when you have a section, they've brought it down from 5 to 3 nights, but it's a longer period, and you're incapacitated for a part of it. So like there's all these thoughts about, well, like for the first 12 hours I can't get out of the bed, who's going to bring the baby to me? Like we're, you know, and you have to ring the nurse to bring the baby, and like they're already understaffed. So on top of that, then like every time a baby is hungry for every woman who's had a section, a nurse has to go and lift the baby. Like things, there's all these invisible things that husbands and partners do, you know. And then it's the same, like if you want to have a shower, like the midwife was lovely. I was very lucky. I had the same midwife for three for two of the three from the Friday to the Sunday, and I was going home on the Monday. Like whether they wanted me to or not, I was just like, I'm going home on Monday. So there's all of these things that I think people, when they just hear like, oh sure, they're trying to keep COVID out, they don't really maybe understand the detail of it. And then like, so it's to the point that like the nurse brings the baby, because I've had a section, I'm in bits, can barely walk, not allowed lift anything. So nurse has to bring my baby down to the front door of the hospital. A porter has already brought my luggage, and there's this like little footbridge from the hospital over to the car park in CUMH. And like I honestly felt like a prisoner getting out of hospital. And like just my husband was like, are you okay? And I was like, just get to the car, because like if we don't get to the car,
Go before they stop me, yeah.
I am just gonna bawl my eyes out, 'cause I was just so relieved to see him, and so happy to get home. And like that's what really drove, like for people who've come here because they've started following me because of the Better Maternity Services campaign. Like it wasn't until, so I gave birth in July, and it wasn't really till September that like there kind of became a critical mass of voice. Caroline Cumming, another Cork woman, well, living in Cork, not from Cork, I'm sure she probably wouldn't want to be. I'll take her as a Cork woman, you know, she's got the gumption. And she started a petition on Uplift and got so many signatures from people. And then it started coming into the mainstream as to like where is the evidence for this? Why are they doing this? And that was really around, like Caroline started it around birth, because the way they do it as well is my husband was allowed in for the operation. If you're in labor, you can't have somebody with you until you're 4 centimeters. So if you're induced, like I was on my first baby, Like, so all of that time, you know, when I was like admitted, had my waters broke, all of that, you're on your own for that at the moment during COVID. Like, they, you know what I mean? Like, they're, you're
Yeah,
on
and
your
then
own for all of
why
that.
four? Like, why? Yeah.
It's just arbitrary. It's just because it suits them, you know. There's no, like, who don't have that recommendation? Who the World Health Organization recommend that you have somebody with you during labour? The very first recommendations from the Health Protection Surveillance Centre, which is an Irish arm of the HSE, also recommended that women have somebody with them, but the heads of the maternity services thought differently. It's only since October in Cork that they will allow a woman, if they experience pregnancy loss, so if they get bad news at their 12-week scan, they're on their own for when they get that news, but then they can have somebody with them for the follow-up appointment. So, like, it's just barbaric.
Yeah,
Like, you know, so that's
that's.
just my experience, and I had a healthy pregnancy. I had a pretty straightforward section. I found it really hard, and I found it really difficult. There are people who have lost babies during, you know, like, you've been in that
Yep.
experience yourself, like, you know what it is. There are people getting bad news at their anatomy scans, there are people in neonatal, and I think probably what really enrages me the most is when the government put together their living with COVID plan, maternity services weren't mentioned once. It's a planned health service. It is 24/7, 365 days of the year, you know, and they didn't even think to mention it once in the plan. Like, a health service they are always going to require. It's just it, yeah,
I
like,
feel like that sort of feeds into, because I know that how I felt when I went through that was just forgotten about. I just felt like they'd forgotten about maternity services. And like
and that
just.
if, yeah, and I
So
think,
like,
like,
oh, you know, you
I
can go to the
just.
pub and you can have food and yeah, you can play sport again and blah blah blah, but we've totally forgotten to even mention that, oh, maternity
And
services can change.
it's such a vulnerable healthcare moment for women.
It
Like,
really is,
you have
yeah.
hands up your
Yeah,
vagina.
there's
Like, you can't
so many
see your
things
hands.
go up there.
Like, I really would love to sit across from Stephen Donnelly and go, when you've had hands inside your body pulling a baby from you, you can come and tell me that I should just get on with it, or I should just manage, or whatever. I think it also speaks to the lack of women that we have in decision-making positions, like, across the HSE and in politics. But, like, I just felt like it wasn't even, like, forgotten about, yeah, invisible, but, like, that I wasn't a real person, like, that I didn't matter in Ireland, you know? Like, I love Ireland, like, I love living here, I love being a citizen here, and it just felt like you're not important. Like, GAA's important. Pubs are important, but you're
That's
not.
I totally agree with you.
And I think that's really, really hard. And so, like, really, the reason, like, I wanted to do this story time with you is I just wanted, like, some people might hate what I have to say. They may not want to hear it at all, and that's absolutely fine. But if there's another woman out there who feels just a tiny little bit less alone, then I'm okay with, you know, the absolute fear I'm going to have tomorrow about sharing this, you know, online out into the world. Because I definitely, like, I remember posting into a Cadoo group before I gave birth, and so many people were like, "You'll be fine, it's grand," kind of like, pull your socks up. And it just made me feel so lonely and so isolated. And then I got a private message from somebody, like a complete stranger, just going, "I feel the same way as you." And I just kind of thought, okay, like, I'm not on my own, you know. So yeah, so I'm not ever having kids again. like, that's fair to say. But I do, like, it's really hard to know that I will never have a positive birth experience. Like, I wouldn't ever risk going for a third. Don't want a third anyway. But like, it's like, I'm so envious. Like, some of my friends have had really empowering birth experiences, really positive experiences. And that is brilliant, and it's lovely, and, you know, it's just, I really wanted that with my second baby, and I just feel like men in power stole that from me. Like, I just, like, I do really feel
But
that.
that's such a reasonable, like, desire as well. It's totally reasonable to want a positive birth experience.
So, like, I really hope now, like, we're at the stage where most maternity hospital staff have been vaccinated. So when this surge is over, you know, we need to talk about, you know, when, how these restrictions are lifted. And just want to be clear as well, like, nobody's talking about having actual public visitors back in the hospitals. Women just want their one person, like, they want their person with them, whoever they choose that person to be. And I think, you know, if we can't figure that out as a country and as a society in COVID, like, what are we at, you know? Like, yeah, go get your takeaway points.
Yeah, I totally agree with
For the audio listeners, that was me doing a very kind of shruggy, angry face.
thank you so much for sharing your story.
It's a bit of a long one for you, but
No,
there you go.
it's a really interesting story. I definitely wasn't expecting, like, you know, your story to be quite so. Even you said you had a bad birth experience, like, I definitely didn't think, you know, what happened to you would have happened to you. It sounds really scary. The
Yeah,
first one in
and
particular, and then the second one doesn't sound great either, yeah.
yeah. So look, it is like it does happen, and like I think, like, and maybe just to end on this, like there is definitely, like, I'd be a pretty honest person, and so like when people would ask after Annabelle, like, who's my first daughter, you know, how was it, and I tell them, like, not, and I don't think this is out of any malice, but like they just didn't really know what to say, and so they just revert back to, but sure, you have a healthy baby. And it is the worst thing to say because it totally diminishes your own experience as a woman. Like, this whole thing about giving birth, like, it has absolutely nothing to do with my daughters. Like, it has nothing to do with how I feel about them, nothing to do with how much I love them. It's my experience. And I think that is something we need to kind of get to grips with as well. Like, they're not mutually exclusive. Like, if you know, if you talk about having a bad negative birth experience, it doesn't mean you don't like your kids,
Yeah, exactly.
which seems to be what some people kind of just go straight to, which I find a bit mad.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Do you want to remind everybody where to find you on the internet and where to find what you're up to?
Yeah, so if you want to kind of find out a bit more about what we're doing around the maternity services campaign during COVID, Twitter is the best place to find me. So I'm at Linda B Tweeting, and then I'm starting a new project on Instagram, which is really around women stepping into their own power. And that is at Women Ascend, and women is WOMXN.
And I'll put all the links in the YouTube description and in the show notes on SoundCloud. Thank you so much for watching. Please subscribe to the channel or follow us on the audio platforms. And please consider becoming a patron because that's how we keep this show on the road. Thank you so much, Linda. And we'll see you in the next one.
Thanks, Claire.
Bye. This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.